Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I am Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
Tonight, we have some pretty special guests. We've been trying to branch out a little bit. So we have some well-known people on the earth. They hunt monsters. They win championship belts. They are Trick or Treat Radio, powered by the Deadites, the electroshock band at the center of the podcast. They are Johnny Wolfenstein and Dynamo Mars. How are you guys doing?
Dude, I get it. Horrible.
It's about time. I've been trying to get him to understand that for a couple weeks now. But no, we're doing great. We appreciate you guys having us on. And we're famous only to ourselves. So I don't know if anyone else knows who we are. But I appreciate the intro.
Oh, I wouldn't even remember his name if you hadn't said it.
I keep wanting to say Johnny Frankenstein, so I had to like write it down.
I'm gonna say Johnny Frankenstein from this point forward.
It's better than what we're called on some of the other podcasts that we go on, so I'll take it.
Nah, man, it's truly like an honor to have you guys on because I've really been digging the show. I think the long form thing works for you guys because it feels like you get to know the personalities and what you do is so different from what we do, and I really actually love it. So I'm excited. Usually I'm really nervous about having people on the podcast, but I'm actually just really excited to pick your brains about horror movies tonight.
And we can't do the long form because after an hour and 15, we get tired of Tyler. So
just becomes me saying and trying to figure out like really like I was an English major. So everything I say, I try to like tie to books and it sounds stupid. So because I don't know nearly as much as I think I do.
Pretentious.
I get tired of these guys are on episode 15.
You just do it now to spite them on every single episode.
That's true.
That's kind of what Brian and I do. We're kind of like an old couple who just stay together to hate one another.
Well, Monster Zero wouldn't be able to find his way here without me, so I'm obliged.
So tonight we're going to be talking about It Follows. It's like everyone who knows horror movies. I don't think this is not going to be a surprise to anybody. So last week you guys, Trick or Treat Radio, did it on your podcast. You did sort of a double feature of Spring and It Follows. So I don't think we need to go into I'm going to try not to quote your podcast. I thought you guys had some really insightful things to say. So I'm going to try to stay away from just like copying your podcast, but I feel like we might have some more things to say about it. We might go through just the movie itself and talk about what actually happened and what we liked about it. And because I think it's like if you sit down and watch that flick, man, it feels pretty obvious where like those influences come from. You guys put three together: Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, and Halloween. I feel like that codifies that whole movie. It feels like, yes, that movie does those three movies better than any other that's tried.
And maybe we can figure out what era this film takes place in.
Right.
No, I think that's the thing. I don't think you can. I mean, like, there is no sense to the technology, and that's what's really cool about it. Like, they're watching on terrible old TV shows. No one has a cell phone, but she has some clamshell e-reader.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, the girl at the beginning has a cell phone, but even that is while more modern than anything else that the house is dressed in. It's a flip phone.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
So
I looked.
Either she has bad credit, or that's like a another strange time stamp.
The little clamshell flip phone was actually just created for the movie. I looked that up too because I was like, what is she reading on that?
Yeah, I thought she was trying to hide that she was taking birth control. Like, that's what it looks like is the birth control clam. I was like, what is this movie about? I guess that would work given the themes of the movie.
Yeah. Birth control comes from a clam?
Yes. Well, yeah, kind of. So
it regulates the clam.
I'm obliged to say this because I never will, and I'm surprised it never came up, but we actually record about a block away from where the birth control film, birth control pill was invented.
Really?
Yeah.
You guys, that should be the start of every show. Like, they had to create it because of your podcast, like retroactively.
I read it now because now people will be able to find us. Now,
yeah, we can bleep all of that out. It wasn't the birth control factory at all.
I didn't even know that. It's news to me. Yeah.
There is a just a one-off lab. There's a kind of renowned, I guess it's just a high school, but it's like a Catholic high school, St. John's, and it's it's kind of buried in the like expansive canvas of campus of St. John's.
It's kind of ironic that the like birth control was invented anywhere near something Catholic.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, if you knew where we lived, like if
I'm going to go out on a limb here.
If he had birth control in the 40s, we still wouldn't be here. So.
That's true.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say from the accents, you guys sound like probably South Carolina. Am I correct about that?
That's an interesting one. We're actually from Massachusetts, near Boston. So
Tokyo, Texas.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Tokyo, Texas. It's like Big Hero 6 and San Fran. What is it? San Fransokyo or whatever? Did you guys see that?
No, I haven't yet. I want to see that.
That movie's. I saw it this past weekend. It was really fucking good.
I've been forced to watch it 100 times.
What? Well, okay. Once, yes, but I guess after that, it's forced. So let's go around the table. What's Johnny Dynamo? What did you guys think of It Follows overall? Just give for those who haven't heard your podcast. What were your overall takes on the movie?
Well, first of all, if they haven't heard our podcast, they're probably smart. So, but no, I actually just saw it again this past weekend. The second time I saw it in the theater, so it was interesting seeing it from a different perspective because, you know, I initially just watched it, was going for the cinematic experience. And this time around, I was a little bit more critical, hoping to, you know, okay, did I really love it as much as I did the first time? Or you know, now that I watch it with a more critical eye, is there things that are going to stick out to me? And it holds up. I still love it just as much. And for me, you know, like you mentioned, Tyler, on the podcast, we all loved it. It was pretty unanimous. Yeah. And we think it's going to be a highly influential film, mm-hmm. and probably one of the best American horror films in years. When somebody asked me recently, what are some of the great horror films in the last couple of years from America? And I had a real hard time thinking, but now this is probably on top of my list. It's going to be on the tip of my tongue whenever someone asks that question.
Yeah, one of the ones that we sort of come back to, like whenever we say great horror movies of the last 10 years, the one that, like as a podcast, we sort of come back is Brian Bertino's The Strangers. That's one that we all really loved as a podcast. What did you guys think of that movie?
Yeah, I actually liked it a lot. It's ironic actually because I hadn't seen it in a while, and I started to reference it in something that I was working on, like a visual reference, and I was like, I should probably sit down and watch this. And I actually liked it more than I liked it. My expectations were sort of set by the fact that I had seen Ills, I think is what the French film was that was heavily kind of. I think they may have crossed paths more than one was referential to the other, but. I really didn't like that movie, and a lot of people did. But I did really, really like The Strangers a lot. The fact that I almost didn't see it. I can credit my special lady friend because I have to see everything that Scott Speedman is in because of Felicity.
Yeah.
Hey.
Ladies and gentlemen, Scott Speedman.
Yeah, we forgot to mention Scott Speedman's actually on the podcast. So,
oh, excellent.
No. No, yeah, The Strangers, I think, like, I would put this up there with The Strangers, and I kind of agree with you guys from last week that House of the Devil is right up there. I still think, that movie is also sort of a shining star of the genre. And one of the conversations we come back to a lot is we can't decide if, like, really great horror movies are really great or if they get a pass because so many horror movies are shitty. Where do you guys come down on thinking about the relative goodness of horror movies versus, you know, like other genres of movies where things are good versus bad?
Well, I definitely think that is the case, especially when, like, for instance, I'm just going to throw out the film Oculus. A lot of people were raving about that. Like, oh my God, this film is incredible. You got to see this. I saw it and was really underwhelmed. And I think it was okay, you know, especially for a WWE film, it was okay. But I think our, you know, our expectations are way lower based on the output of horror in the last several years. So I think when a film like that comes along, people are grasping on to, if it's better than average, just like, oh my God, this film is incredible because it's so much better than all this other crap, like what that Blumhouse is releasing, right, and some of these other, you know, some of the other major
Oculus
horror.
Was a Blumhouse joint as well.
Was it?
Was it?
Okay.
Whoa.
That makes a lot of sense. Meta.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I agree with you on that. Like, it's hard for me as I almost have to apologize for being a genre fan, like liking horror movies as much as I do, because then I have to go like, well, it's not every horror movie, because a lot of them are shitty. And I'm like, I'm not as big a fan as of like Insidious as a lot of people are, because I, not just the movie itself, like the third act, but just all of the copycats over the last several years. Yeah. I mean, like I like the occasional ghost story and like haunted house movie, but it has gotten ridiculous.
But Sinister is easily far superior to Insidious.
That's what I think.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. I was a much bigger fan of Sinister than Insidious.
I think I like Insidious most.
Go ahead, Dynamo.
Of those three films, I think I like the first Insidious most. Mm. Of Insidious, Insidious Dose and... wait, did you say Sinister or?
Yeah.
I hated Sinister. I was thinking of the ghost clap there.
What was that? What was that?
I like the Conjuring.
Yeah, the Conjuring is pretty okay. Yeah, I like
what
that.
What did you hate about Sinister?
I'm never the guy who... First of all, I agree with everything that you guys are saying about, you know, the state of horror and how things are perceived versus that. Like, I feel that there are a lot of films that I think are fine.
Yeah.
I think Housebound was fine.
Yeah.
I think Grabbers was fine. I thought that those were, to you know, steal a phrase from one of our comrades, perfectly serviceable films. But I think that, you know, they're getting a lot of hype because it's there's also like kind of this almost punk rock movement of like, you know, I feel like a lot of horror fans are like really nestling into like, well, our new horror input comes from on demand, you know, in like a digital medium. Like we don't even need the movies anymore. So I feel like because of that, they're like behind things as like almost a genre. So they're like, yeah, this is great and everybody should see it. And the thing that I think like even we're going to review a film in a little while that I think I don't know. I think in the genre it's in, I think I really I have a lot of good things to say about it, but as a cinematic experience itself, you know, it's going to be lukewarm, and it's something that even podcasts that I respect, like we're kind of going gung-ho about it. Like even ones that I feel like are a little more, vocabulary word, Wolfie.
Discerning?
Discerning, thank you. So as far as Sinister goes, like, there's just some shit that went down in that movie that can I say the S word?
Okay.
That those are two words that usually aren't paired together for me, by the way. there's just some stuff that like I couldn't like wrap my head around in the sense of like how It Follows is a perfect paradox to this in the sense where the mechanics were very simple. And anything they added to it or did that didn't make sense, you could kind of explain after the fact. But I feel like Sinister, in both the actions, especially of some of the leaps of logic that Ethan Hawke made and like the mythology that they built, like didn't hold up to any scrutiny. Like everything I didn't think worked initially about It Follows, I thought about it later and was like, oh, well, like here's a perfect example. Like, why wasn't it just relentless was my initial thinking.
Yeah.
Like, why wasn't that thing all around? Well, because the fucking monster walked to Cape Cod or wherever they drove to, right? And then they drove all the way back to Detroit, and it had to walk all the way back from Detroit. So, like, that's what he says at the beginning. It's always walking. It's always coming for you. But you can get some distance between it if you do, you know, if you're on it. And like, you know, initially I was like, well, why isn't this thing like upper ass 24/7? Because it has to get to where she is. Why did, you know, why did Bagul or whatever his name was in Sinister, how did the little girl did some things that little girls can't do.
Yeah.
Like she's still like a little girl unless they made her Bagul. if you haven't seen it, Wolfie, Bagul looks like those guys that are asleep.
No, that's Insidious.
That's Insidious, yeah. Brian.
Damn it.
Yeah, no, Bagul looks like guys that, like, you know, are still crying outside the local rock club because Peter Steele died.
That's funny.
So, But yeah, I just didn't like the more I thought about it, I was like, ah, that was pretty okay. And then I got back to it, I'm like, well, in all things like that where there's a contrived thing, I'm like, why didn't Bagul just come hit somebody with a hammer then?
Yeah.
Like, why does he have to do all these shenanigans? Like, I just don't understand it when they don't like they didn't make it about the mythology. They made it about figuring out the mythology. Yeah. And then by the time you got to the end, you had all these questions that you were like, well, I don't know. I would have liked it better if Bagul was just smacking people on the dome.
Yeah, I think like I agree with you.
Now they're going to explain it.
Yeah,
great.
Even more. No, I think like I agree with you.
I have Insidious 3 as well coming.
Ugh.
Yeah, I'm a little. See, I like Insidious, and I like Insidious 2.
I didn't like the second one very much. I didn't like the end of the first one or the all of the second one. Like, I like the first two acts. I think I tend to hate horror movies. Third acts. I think that's where most horror movies fall apart, is that you build up this tension and then, like, I don't think horror, like, they know how to build tension but not figure out how to end the movie, because it either ends in, like, okay, you get slaughtered or you don't, but then there's a jump scare at the end. There's, like, a stinger. And then I think that's where most horror movies fall apart. And I think that's one of the things I liked about is It Follows.
Yeah.
Even horror literature has that problem, though, too. I mean, there have been several, even, you know, to hit the master himself, several Stephen King novels that work throughout the whole thing. And then sometimes you get to the end and you're like, oh.
That sucks, yeah. Like, yeah. What the fuck are you doing?
Right.
You just got to end it somehow.
I don't know if you knew this or not, Drew, but for the Deadites, their manager is actually Jack Ketchum. So,
sweet.
I saw that on their bio.
Yeah, we have a Jack Ketchum and a Jack Ketchum Jr. And they're both sweet. Not that guy.
Yeah,
because that guy's awesome.
He ends everything awesome. Yeah, nothing he's ever ended has ended badly.
No. Our
it ends bad.
Jack Ketchum's as dumb as a box of hammers and twice as heavy.
So it's not a reference to the author.
No.
I thought it was, yeah.
Jack Ketchum. His real name is Jack Ketchum.
His real name isn't Jack author. Ketchum, you realize.
I didn't realize that.
We stole it from some dude that we used to wrestle from with, actually. Right? Is that where?
Really?
I don't know where he got it. There's been, like, Jack Ketchum is like Remington Steele. There's been, like, a couple of them. Yeah.
They retire their thongs and pass it on to the next guy.
Dallas Marr, I think, is his name.
Yeah, his real name is Dallas something.
Yeah, Dallas Marr.
I think that the what you're saying, Tyler, about the third act of the horror movies is what's kind of made the last few horror movies we've watched so much better. Is that, I mean, as far as like It Follows being in strongly, and so does, I mean, I think Spring does as well. The Tyler and Drew haven't seen it.
I very much recommend that film because
what's
going to happen is I feel like that's one that's going to be a victim of expectation of another movie that I think is better than a lot of the ones I mentioned before, but you know, a lot of people are losing their minds over it. But
it's absolutely, you know, like, and it's an amazing love story that also happens to have some horror elements to it.
Just let it be. That's how that would be my advice for that movie. Just let it be Spring.
The things, like, what sucks is that their real first resolution kind of also passed without a lot of people, you know, there wasn't a lot of hype for that movie. So I feel like they need some sort of hype because they make really interesting movies. I thought Spring would be a cool movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I loved Resolution. And I think
their entry in Viral was one of my favorites. Was my favorite. Actually.
Yeah, that was the one I liked the most too, I think.
Yeah. Was that Bone? I haven't seen that the one. The Bone something?
Yeah, the GoPro with the skaters and the
cult.
Yeah.
Well, do you think if they make a sequel to It Follows that they will walk faster? Do you think that will be the thing? Like, this time she walks faster or whatever. Like, do you think this movie will have a sequel?
It's going to walk towards you. No, it's going to walk towards you this time.
Yeah.
That's the twist.
I really hope they just leave. I mean, I know it's a wishful thinking, but I really hope they leave this alone.
Me too. Yeah.
I don't think they will, but here is my question for you guys, for everybody at the table, okay? So I agree that there are certain horror film endings that I don't like.
Yeah.
But what's a better way to end them? If you tack on a prologue, right, everybody's away from the cabin, they're home, they take a shower, and everything's good, and we've sat in our easy chair, and we have a rest, and even if you, you know, attach, like, some sort of a, like, Friday the 13th-esque, like, you know, jump ending to that, or Carrie is probably, like, the best example of that of all time. you're still probably adding like 10 to 15 minutes to that like perfect pop movie, 88 minutes like runtime. If you have, you know, like the I think the thing that works the best and the worst about the horror movie endings and the way they're doing them is that they end. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's in lieu of actually having the ending. Like, I watched Silver Lining Playbooks the other day, and I didn't think I'd like it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah,
and that film, I think, did it right. Like it jumped ahead a little bit and had like a really good prologue, and it worked. But the resolution of it is in a way like you can't have like five campers like what is the other ending? Five campers go out, most of them get beaten and killed by like Bigfoot, and then like it's Christmas and we're gonna, you know, now we're making pie. Like, I'm just not sure. Like I for a while I really hated the way horror movies were ending. Until I realized that I couldn't come up with anything better. Like, there's probably not a, like, you know, what works in novels don't work in films.
Yeah.
I, unless you want to end them like the Marvel movies, I guess. Bagul, I got a job for you.
Yeah, like, you should work for me. Yeah, work for me.
So what's better?
I don't know. You know,
like, I'm not being challenging or antagonistic.
No, yeah.
That's what I do on my show. But like, I just like, I want to know, like, if I'm missing something really, really obvious, like what works better.
I don't know. Like, I think it's context specific. Drew, you go ahead. I'm gonna step back on and let you go.
Oh, well, I mean, I was just gonna sit there and jump in with what would probably be my pat answer to anything like this. I like the ending to It Follows because it fit in the vein of the John Carpenter, the ambiguous endings. They don't end for the most part. Like, Prince of Darkness doesn't end, and that's what's kind of cool about it. Is did he reach the mirror? Did he destroy the world for that kind of ugly redheaded lady?
Kind of the French Connection ending, where it's like, like you have the shootout, you don't quite know what happens with the camera because the camera doesn't follow. I don't know,
Who is? I mean, it doesn't in this. It wasn't really over because in It Follows, it's not going to be over. It's always going to be It's always going to be following you. Is the person behind you it, or is it just a person behind you? But at least they were together.
I think a lot of horror movies fail because their endings. It's not that they're not satisfactory, but they try to have it both ways, and like it never feels good. So like when you have. Okay, so when you have the stinger ending, you have the you like the girl and the guy, they defeat the monster, whatever it is, and then they're together and they're happy. But then the audience, we have this moment of like dramatic irony where like the audience sees the monster but they don't, and then the film cuts to black. I think that's a really unsatisfying ending because
it's not an ending.
Yeah, like it just feels like, okay, well, we had a resolution, but then you just fucked it up by doing this other thing. Like, I feel like more horror movies should either end or not end. Like, they should either be more ambiguous or have some finality to them. Like, I don't mind having the good guys lose, but, like, don't do the thing where they win but then ultimately lose. It's just like, that sort of bait and switch is, I mean, like you said, Carrie did it in, what, 76?
Right.
I just feel like more horror movies want to have it both ways. They want you to feel like, oh man, here's the good thing, but you know the bad. Like, so many movies in where I'm like, okay, now we're about, like, the obligatory thing is about to jump out for no reason other than that's just it. So, like, right. I feel like more, like, it depends on the movie itself.
Those endings are referential, and I feel like a lot of young filmmakers don't even know why they're,
Just
like, this is the way we end one of these things.
Yeah, like this is obviously, I think a lot of them think like this is obviously a horror movie ending. And I think what It Follows does well is that it doesn't have, I thought, and like the most disappointing thing to me in the film was I did not like the pool scene very much until you saw like the blood spreading across the pool. The one at the very end. Like, I thought worked because we first see them in the pool, but I didn't think I thought like, oh man, if this is the way this movie ends, I'm going to be kind of disappointed in this ending.
That's the scene I think that works the least in the film.
Yeah.
Like it works the best in kind of like I liked how it was kind of like, Wolfie said like the Goonies, like I got like kind of a Stephen King vibe from it.
Yeah.
Like, I liked that element of it, but I also feel like as a thing, it worked like it was the most harebrained, which it was, you know,
like, they make this big production of, like, we're going to go here and do this. And there's, like, a lot of setup for that. But then ultimately, it's not that, which I kind of like that the monster, you know, the it in this, it actually sees it coming and is able to thwart it. But at the same time, there was too much setup for it to be, like, to be unsuccessful. But I don't know that I would have thought that was a good successful ending. I didn't quite. I do like that I didn't know how they were actually going to end this movie. So I think that's a plus. But when I think bad endings are also when you can see it coming. Like it does a callback that doesn't reference itself. It doesn't do the obvious thing that most horror movies do, which is in the first act you get the thing where it's like, well, you know, this one valve here holds all the water in or whatever. Like, you know that if someone says that in the movie, that in the third act, they're going to go like, oh, we have to release the valve. And It Follows doesn't do that. And I think that's one of the great things about the writing in that movie.
Well, mm-hmm. I think there's no way to end it that way, too. Like, they set themselves up in a way that there isn't a solution.
No.
Like, it's your solution is you die or you have sex with someone and pawn it off on someone else.
Right.
Yeah.
And but there's just, a chance that you could still die if you don't warn that next person.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing. So I think it's set up. Yeah. In a way, I mean, it's completely terrifying and relentless in that way. And that's where I think it was interesting. I think they ended it well in that sense. I agree with that. There's just no way it is ambiguous because you don't kill it unless you go back to some sort of weird it goes all the way back to the first person who had it. Oh God, that's the sequel. Shit. That's the awful sequel. Oh well, God, that's it.
And Dynamo,
they should have
like,
just led it to Detroit, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they should have.
they she goes to Detroit, she catches up and like, you know, whatever it looks like is like, wait, this is where you live. Fuck, I'm sorry.
And then it starts like, walking away.
I'm just gonna go.
Yeah, there's like, nothing
you've already
do.
Got it bad.
I'm just gonna walk away now. Yeah. Like it's just them walking into like almost like the Looney Tunes ending where you have the the screen closing in on the character. Yeah, like I think one more thing about the way that movies end, and then I'll be done with like my diatribe. I think the other thing is that
this diatribe.
Just not all of them. I have multiple ones per podcast, but I think also Dynamo, you're right. Most movies have like. It's hard to end them because they have to set you up to end. And I will definitely concede that Sinister has that because the movie's really obsessed with like uncovering the mythology. If the movie, I think, would have been better for me, and I liked it. It would have been better if there wasn't really as much explanation of the mythology. If it was just like, whatever, like this thing is out there to get you. Like these videotapes are here and it's fucking terrifying. Like seeing someone get run over with a lawnmower is terrifying and that's it. So I feel like that would be better, but if you start to unravel the mythology of the flick, you have to have that sort of ending. You can't really leave that ambiguous. So like with It Follows, you don't have to know why the thing fucking It follows you because it follows you. Like it's circular logic and like that keeps it scary.
Logical.
Oh, go ahead, Dominic.
No, after you, please.
Yeah. Well, I was just gonna say it's no more logical than any of the other killers we have in anything else. I mean, honestly. Yeah,
for sure.
I found this movie reminded me a lot of like the scares and creepiness I felt the very first time I saw The Sixth Sense too. The scenes where the creature, the it, would like just show up in the hallway or through the door, really like they made me jump a few times. I jumped more.
This is scary.
Yeah,
there aren't very many movies that are scary.
Yeah, it was terrifying. Like I jumped more in this film than I've jumped in a long time, and that was I giggled afterwards because I was so happy about it.
Like, why was that guy on the roof though? Why did It Follows walk to the roof?
That's a good point.
It followed him to the roof
a lot.
I think that so that everyone could see his dick because it reached from the house from the roof to the ground. I think
did it get up there? It was like, oh shit! How the fuck do I get down?
Yeah.
I
mean,
there was an acknowledgement that male nudity generally makes. You know, in 2015, like with how uptight everybody is and how reverse politically correct everybody is and everything else, I think there's a precedent that male nudity makes people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I also think that there was like they still wanted this to come out, right? Like at theaters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that they, I think they're like, we want, like, we need cock in this movie.
Yeah.
we don't want it flopping down the hall at us as this is chasing somebody or on the beach. Like, but with that dude's brajoo up on the roof, like, we like the best of both worlds.
Yeah. I think the movie does a lot with that. One thing I noticed early on, I don't know if you guys noticed, this is just
that should be on the box. This movie does a lot with cock.
This movie does a lot with cock. Brajoo.
They hang dong very often in this film.
So, like, the first person you see naked is the woman, you know, when she's, when all of this is revealed to her, which a scene I really loved. I wish we had more time to talk about. But when she first starts, did anyone see her wearing sandals? I think it was his mom, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Holy shit, I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Because when she comes to the door, right.
Yeah.
Mm. I didn't realize that right now.
Whoa. Yeah. So, anyway, yeah, like, I mean, there's so, I feel like I could do another entire episode just talking about It Follows. Like, I mean, the plot points be damned. Like, it's just a plot doesn't matter when the mood is right. And that sounds like a 70s.
I think it was.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it like
that. Plot doesn't matter when the mood is right.
I feel like
with the rendezvous for me and you and you.
Under candlelight. Yeah, like when movies that are essentially plotless work when the mood, the environment works, and this movie does a lot with set design, with the look of the film. It's like intentionally ugly too. It doesn't try to find the most beautiful landscapes for everything. Right. I mean, the beach is ugly, like the roads, they don't find really beautiful roads. They're all really dirty and tacky looking. The houses are awful. I mean, it's Detroit, so but as a movie, like, that is such a risk, you know, because I think a lot of people might look at it and just said, I don't know, it's like, it doesn't look good. But this movie has a really specific and art style that I really liked. And I love the way they did costume design it, and it does keep you as, like, I don't know when this movie is set, but I don't necessarily, how intentional do you, I think it was intentional, but I don't think that they did it for any reason other than, like, well, this is just the way we're, like, setting up the clothes. I don't know.
I mean, I think to set up movies nowadays. I mean, cell phones kill horror movies nowadays too. I think you set up this one. I mean, so it'd be a lot easier. Hey, you just call that guy you just had sex with. Hey, dude, there's this thing. I mean, yeah, he's not going to believe you, but you still, it makes it a lot easier than you have to go track the person down and
you could take a selfie
up to a chair and show him your naked mom who's after you.
Video. Well, but if you're the only person who sees it, no one would see it. So you can, like, you could just tell people and they'd be like, you're full of shit.
Which is great, which is what's the great thing. I remember we left the theater and I actually pointed out to somebody. I was like, hey, do you see that guy? And someone actually said, who? And I was like, I got scared for like 5 seconds. I was like, oh, they just didn't realize who I was pointing at.
I did love the scene in the theater. Like, as far as setting up this film, that was one of the most terrifying movies.
It was great.
But you didn't know then, yeah.
Yeah, I think the great thing is how they sort of give you these breadcrumbs throughout. Like, even in the very beginning, like, it's like, what the hell is chasing her? You know, she's running down the road and then she hops in the car and then she's on the beach. And, you know, I think they really did a nice job of breadcrumbing along the way to give you little tidbits, just as much as you need to know, and then start revealing as it goes.
Because that's how a dozen lesser movies would have ended, right?
Yeah.
Like, to go back to what we were talking about, like, you can't see her.
Yeah, that would be the third act reveal that no, like, they would drag it through two acts, and then the third act would be, oh wait, no one else can see this. Yeah.
Why was she in heels?
In the beginning?
Yeah.
Because she
I just think
she's leaving her own house. It's like she's in, you know, like sleepwear. I just thought it was strange. I mean, it makes for a great cinematic scene of her running in heels. I mean,
she's very
short. It makes for an illogical scene, but it makes for a really cool scene that she's running away from her house in heels from
maybe that's just
whatever.
What was close to the door.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Because she was barefoot originally, I think.
Yeah.
And then she went back
in
and
got shoes.
That's a terrible
choice.
Yeah. I've been told, I've been wanting to talk about this with Wolfie in real life all day, but I was told by some of our, like, you know, we get really close with our listeners, and also our listeners are people that, like, work for the Deadites and stuff like that. One of our stage manager guys told me that there are two films that I'm not allowed to talk about on Trick or Treat Radio anymore. And this film ends successfully like one of those films. And I think what makes this film work is it ends kind of like Drive. Like, we don't know exactly what's happening at the end of Drive. We don't know if Ryan, if the gauze is dying. We don't know, like, you know, what's happening there. But we know that the characters have come to some sort of, like, they've come to terms with it.
Yeah.
So we're left with a brilliant, we don't really know what's going to happen. Is somebody going to find him? Is he going to get up and go to the hospital? Is that in It Follows? Is that the it following them? But either way, they're okay with it.
Yeah.
Whatever is about to happen right now, they're okay with it. So we're left with a sound resolution, which is, if he dies, he's okay right now. Like, this could be the end of his story. Yeah. Like, he's come to grips with his place in life, and as has these two characters, and it follows. But maybe there is more to tell. You know what I mean? Like, it's open-ended and ends somehow. Yeah. Like, it's both done and you can continue, and it's brilliant. It's really great filmmaking. The other movie that I am not allowed to talk about anymore, The Raid, ends in a kind of similar way.
Yeah.
Like, do they get arrested when they walk out of that gate? Do they get shot? Do they get all the way through? Like, what's going to happen? Like, what's the rest of his life going to be? It's great because that story is done. They've made their decision. And I think what makes a successful ending in a film, and it's so hard to do because there has to be some sort of great acting or great writing for this level of character development. And I think It Follows has both those things, is that you have to understand that they've come to peace with whatever is going to happen right now.
Yeah. Like Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. That movie right. is a fantastic ending. Or like French Connection, I think, is maybe my favorite ending to a movie of all time, because I think it takes a lot of balls to, like, it sucks that they have the, like, oh, and then Popeye Doyle went to transfer to, like, I think that movie ending with him running into another room and firing and you don't know who shoots whom, like, I think that is a fantastic ass ending. So yeah, I like the ambiguity plus, like, ambiguity. What? I fucked up words.
Ambiguity?
Ambiguity.
Hey, so I'm a part-time podcaster and contributor to our website. Lona is listening to us right now, but she was she's giving me her theory on what It Follows is. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's sex is never just sex. It compounds. Your parents, your friends, former lovers, it's all baggage. It fucking follows you to every new relationship. You have to deal with it or it will ruin everything you get into. She said it's probably a girl way to see it, but that was her theory on what it was.
I actually kind of like that better than the STD angle.
So what the Onion, the AV Club said, it was adulthood or like impending adulthood.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can't escape that.
I stand for it is at least partially, like, I think where the film was made, whether or not those guys are from there or not, I didn't do any like background, is a metaphor for the inevitability of, like, that Detroit could be the first modern American ghost city.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that, and there's an inevitability to it, and I think that that's kind of one of the, at least an implied metaphor, because it's always coming. Like, even though you can make it a little better, like, there's probably, you know, like, not much that's going to happen to make Detroit better in the long run. Like, it's mm-hmm. like the whole landscape of what made Detroit successful. And we live in a way, the area that we're from is an old mill city. And they also used to make a lot of, there's two big factories that make,
birth control
and airplane parts, during the World War II, for instance. This part of the world was one of the second most potentially targeted spot on the United States East Coastline, because they would have hit two of the major outposts for things that were making plane engines.
But they never.
And there's also a lot of textile plants and stuff. And when all that shut down, much like the car industry, you know, pulling up stakes in Detroit, like, this has never recovered. The way this part of the world is the way it's going to be forever now.
Yeah.
The difference between like Detroit and here is that I feel like there is this part of the world is more clustered together. So there's like a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, people can go work in Boston. People can go work, you know, in Rhode Island and in other states and at other places. And it's only an hour drive away. That part of the Midwest, like, you're closer to a different country than probably anywhere else.
Except Chicago.
So, you know, it's there's going to be a reckoning, maybe not even in our lifetime, where, you know, Detroit is probably going to be 70, like, it, you know, it's going to be like Mad Max. It's going to be like the end of the world up there, because it's just nothing. All you ever hear, you don't hear about Detroit at all unless somebody's in the playoffs or... some kid shoots people up.
Right. I would definitely like go see a RoboCop meets Mad Max movie. If you're pitching that idea, I'm buying it.
I would too. I hope. Why didn't she go bang RoboCop?
Exactly. Because then he.
That's the sequel.
Yeah, that's the sequel. It walks faster, but there's RoboCop.
Yeah, but she would catch, like, that's the problem. That wouldn't be a very long movie because that thing would fucking catch RoboCop. That thing, he doesn't go very fast. He's like, come on.
Is it the new RoboCop? New RoboCop. Slow down. Faster. He's faster.
He does move faster.
Yeah. Even RoboCop 3, Robert John Burke's RoboCop could fly through the air. Yeah.
That is
so
true.
He'd be faster, so.
Maybe. That is true. That's a bad movie by a good director.
So we're looking for the sequel It Leads instead of It Follows.
It's true.
All right. Well, guys, if they name it that,
I'm going to be so upset.
What? If they name it that, It Leads?
If they give
it's going to be It Follows too. I mean, it's just going to be straight up It Follows.
T-O-O? Maybe. Do you think It Follows T-O-O?
It's still
I think
follows.
Just two.
Oh.
It still follows.
Maybe give it a subtitle, but maybe not.
It Follows Again.
Yeah. Ugh. All of that sounds terrible.
What the hell was that?
That's Monster Zero. He's actually a small dog.
Podcast regular Monster Zero. Well, thanks guys for having. We'll go ahead and cut it off here. Brian, do you want to do the outro? I'll go ahead and start the music up, and we're actually, if you're listening to us on live on Ustream, we are about to transition. Where can we find the Deadites? What's the channel you guys are on for the live show?
We broadcast via YouTube, but we just link it right to our website. So go to trickortreatradio.com and just click the Watch Live link right there. And we'll continue some of this conversation. I wanted to just do a horror roundtable with you guys anyway. Sure. So if folks are out there listening and they want to tune into Part Dose, join us over on trickortreatradio.com.
All right, sounds great, Brian. Let's do this. Music's coming up.
Yeah. So, guys, thanks for listening to us tonight. It's been a while since we've been on live. So, thanks for bearing with us through
what
the
pleasure it was
couple
for.
Of weeks of old shows when we used three iPhones to record our episodes. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
Thanks, Trick or Treat Radio, for showing up. You guys are welcome on anytime you want. We'd love to have you on again.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, let's do it. Next time we'll plan a little bit better, but would love to definitely come on again with you guys. It was a pleasure having for you guys to have us on, so thank you for that.
Yeah, stop it. They're coming on our show. Stop kissing it.
We'll plan for a shorter period of time, but we'll plan better.
Yes, exactly.
Like 6 weeks. All right, guys. We'll see y'all next week on the Horrible Podcast.